So I took a backpack and I put a 25-pound dumbbell in it and 30 golf balls and went and walked 12 miles, just circles around the neighborhood. And the next day I got up and I was hurting so bad. My hips hurt, back hurt, shoulder hurt, everything. So I got up and walked 7 more miles. And then I called Ben and I was like, "Look, Bram, I'm ready to go."
This is the Tournament Code.
Luke, thank you for joining us. This is the start of season two, and season two is going to be a little bit different than the season one and all the previous episodes. Not in many ways. We're going to still talk with interesting guests. We're still going to have fun. We're going to try to try out some new things and make sure that the podcast is interesting, because I think we've done a great job talking with guests. I don't think we've done always a great job at highlighting our guests and their cool experiences. So normally, if you've listened to this podcast a long time, you know I say, all right, we know where you're at. Now tell us how you got into the game of golf. But I think this one, we should start a little bit differently, and we should kind of start with an icebreaker. I'm going to start every episode with an icebreaker, and I'm going to call it the Puttview Books, because they're our friend and sponsor, the Puttview Books opening tee shot. And so since it's Masters week right now, this is going to drop on Friday of the Masters. Let's just start off with a little bit of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, almost kind of music, kind of vibe. And so we'll do a little Masters trivia. We'll do one question and maybe a second one, depending on how the first one goes. Who is the youngest Masters champion?
God,
I'll give you the options. The options are,
I mean, there's really only
Tiger
two
Woods,
answers.
Jordan Spieth, or Gene Sarazen.
I know this.
I'm going, it's either Jordan Spieth or Tiger Woods. I'm going to go Jordan Spieth.
It is Tiger Woods.
By how much? A couple months?
No, Jordan got the scoring record. I guess he didn't get the youngest winner.
Oh, that's right, because the year he lost the Masters, that was when he would have been the youngest champion. Then he won a couple years later.
It's okay. It's okay, because we'll give you an option, and I feel like this one's pretty easy. Who is
That's a bogey on the first hole.
Who is the oldest Masters champion? And the options
it's either
are
Tiger or Jack.
Raymond Floyd, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods.
Jack.
Jack is correct.
46
Jack,
years old.
46. And don't forget, this is one of my – I mean, I was a big Jack Nicklaus fan growing up, even though he was done playing. I loved reading all about him. One of the coolest things I thought about – one of the coolest things about Jack, I think, not only did 1986 happen, in 1996, he also, when he was 56 years old, was ridiculously competitive to winning, and I think he top 10 the event in 1996.
I feel like Fred Couples has been up there real close a couple times, too, for an older guy.
He might be the oldest to make a cut, Fred.
He's oldest being contingent on the weekend multiple years in a row, I feel like. Every time, it's always Saturday morning, Freddie's in the last three groups.
Well, someday Charlie Hoffman will be the oldest to be in the contention on the first day of the Masters.
Yeah.
As he keeps up how he's kept up all this time. Well, I kind of like that. I kind of like that icebreaker. Let's talk a little bit about you. It's Masters week, but you're not at the Masters, which means you got a little bit of work to do. Tell us about what you're doing right now.
As far as your job. Oh, okay. So, you know, I've been on the road 5 of the last 6 weeks. It was obviously a grind trying to get in the Masters. We had a nice week last week. That's obviously probably our biggest goal, because if you have qualified for the Masters, that means you have played some incredible golf. I think, which is what, in my opinion, makes the Masters my favorite tournament of the year, right? It's just an absolute accomplishment to be in the Masters, period, and then being able to compete and try to win. You know, I can only imagine what's going through some of those guys' minds, you know, on Saturday, Sunday. That's why it's my favorite tournament to watch, always has been. And it's a huge, huge goal of mine to be able to wear that white jumpsuit walking around there, too.
Exactly. So do you talk to your player about, you know, our goal is to play in the Masters, this is what we need to do to play in the Masters, or do you kind of just try to play the best that you can and see what happens?
I think it's really going week to week, trying to play the best golf you can possibly play. You know, preparing for every week is different, learning different types of grass, reading lies, feeling out greens, whether it's firm, fast. Sometimes it's, you know, soft on Thursday and Friday and then firm Saturday and Sunday. So it's really kind of you get in the groove for that week. And then I think if you focus too much on making the Masters, you maybe lose sight of what you're trying to do that week. But it's a, you know, qualifying for the Masters is one thing, but no, we don't really speak about that. We just go, what are we going to do this week to play the best golf we can possibly play?
That is cool. Yeah, I think we've had a lot of guests who have played in the Masters, played in major championships. And to me, one of the crazy parts is we've had a lot of really good guests on and they've played in a lot of major championships. But some of them, I'm like, man, you've only played in 5 Masters. Like, you're a well-known name, or at least pretty well-known to me. It's just, it's impressive how hard it is to get into that. Tell us, you talked about going out there, throwing the white jumpsuit and caddying and goals. Tell us who you're caddying for right now, how long you've been there, and what that's been like learning for you as a caddy, because it's not something you've been doing for your entire life, caddying, that is.
Yeah, so I have kind of a unique situation with that. I caddy for Ben Martin. He's been on the PGA Tour since 2010. He had a couple of stints on the Korn Ferry Tour. I believe he finished 2nd on the money list the last time he was down on Korn Ferry Tour. I've played golf against Ben since we were 12 years old. And then, 12 is approximately around that time. And then we ended up going to Clemson together, lived together freshman year at Clemson, lived together after school for a year or two. And then I'd never caddied before at all. I had just finished playing professionally at the time. I missed finals of Q school by 1 twice, and I didn't really want to play anymore. I wanted to get in on the sales side of golf. And then Ben called one day and was like, what do you think about caddying? And I was like, man, I'm not sure if I can physically do it. You know, I haven't walked 18 holes in a long time. So I took a backpack and I put a 25-pound dumbbell in it and 30 golf balls and went and walked 12 miles, just circles around the neighborhood. And the next day I got up and I was hurting so bad. My hips hurt, back hurt, shoulder hurt, everything. So I got up, walked 7 more miles. And then I called Ben and I was like, look, man, I'm ready to go. So I went to Boise, Idaho for the first round of Korn Ferry Finals. And that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I didn't pick up anything because I was hurting so bad. And then on Sunday I got there. I was like, all right, Ben, let me pick up this bag, see what it feels like. And the padding was better. It was a little bit lighter than the backpack. That was the smartest thing I ever did because I was nervous about physically doing it. I look at my watch at the end of every week and it's normally about 56 miles. And the bag, you know, weighs 40 to 50 plus pounds, depending on rain gear and if it's wet and whatnot. So I was nervous about it, but man, it is so fun. And Ben, you know, being a somewhat of a veteran out there, when I got out there, he was telling me all the inside stuff about caddying. You know, if, say, we're playing with Lucas Glover, if Lucas is in the fairway bunker and he misses the green and Ben hits the ball on the green, it's my job to break his fairway bunker and his caddy's job to clean Ben's ball. And, you know, having a player like Ben to explain all that as I was out there was super beneficial, but it's nice being out there with a friend too.
That is cool. I think that's something for me caddying now. I've caddied for Cooper a few different times, caddied for him a decent bit over course of past 10 years. And something I, you know, a lot of caddies probably would think this is super dumb, but like qualifying for the, when we're qualifying for the USAM, you can't do this out on the tour, but for us, I throw his bag on a push cart because I'm like, man, you hired me for my brains. You didn't hire me for my ability to carry a bag around. If you wanted that, you can hire a pack mule. otherwise, I'll push this around and spend all my energy thinking about what we need to do and paying attention to the stuff we need to pay attention to. And it's pretty cool that you got a player that isn't hiring you just to be a pack mule, carry things around, which isn't a bad thing. Some guys just want a guy who can carry it around. He's not concerned that, oh, you don't know how to exactly the protocol. Because that's the easy stuff. Having someone that you can work with day in and day out, someone who you can work on strategy and actually help you out on the course is the stuff, at least to me, that really matters. So that's cool that you've been able to do that. How was the transition from playing professional golf, being out there, to all of a sudden just caddying out there? What's it like watching someone else essentially go through on a different stage, but go through what you were going through as a player?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest things that Ben likes. You know, I've been in situations, I've won some big tournaments, you know, I certainly not on the PGA Tour scale, but I won the South Carolina State Am in college and the Palmetto Am in college. So I've been in situations, and also I know his golf game really well, to where, like, there was an instance at the Players Championship on number 7, and we had made a decision that it was going to be a 7-iron. We talked about it the whole time, and then all of a sudden the wind switched on a dime, and I already had my hand on the 6-iron because he backed off and pulled out his yardage book, and I just held out the 6-iron sideways. There was no discussions. No, do you think this is the right club? It wasn't he overthinking. We were on the same wavelength of, like, he wants 6-iron. Here's a 6-iron. And he fired it and hit a really good shot. Now, I believe made birdie on that hole. And that was, you know, a cool moment for me because it just felt like we were gelling on the same page. For me, going out there just caddying, you know, golf is so hard mentally to control your emotions. I'm a wide open guy. My brain runs wide open. And if I make 6 birdies in a row, man, I might as well be doing jumping jacks walking down the fairway. You can tell that I'm excited. I'm ready to go. And when it's not going well, you know, I wasn't really a club thrower or a club snapper. Unfortunately, I did maybe do it once or twice that I was embarrassed about. But, you know, it's so hard for me to just stay level. When things are going well, I'm so excited. When things are going bad, I'm just determined to try to fix it. I'm trying so hard. And that was what almost burnt me out on golf, where I was like, man, my brain's, I'm trying too hard. I can't calm my brain down. And Ben is unbelievable. He's always been that way in college. He walks down the fairway and you cannot tell whether that guy is 5 over par or 5 under par. You cannot tell. And that's something that, you know, is not really taught. I guess it is maybe at an early age, if you start practicing the proper mental training, I think that would be what I missed the most as a kid. I just tried to use natural talent, go out there, play golf, and then win from there. But going into caddying after that, now I'm getting to do all of the part of golf that I absolutely love, without having to physically hit the shot. I can trust somebody that has a little bit more talent than I do to do that aspect. So it's fun to be, certainly fun to be a part of it. I was a little nervous of whether or not caddying would make me want to play golf really bad, but it really hasn't, because the only thing I learned was, holy cow, these guys are good. They're a lot better than I was. They're a lot more accurate than I was. They're a lot more, the attention to detail is just unbelievable of the guys that are out there. And that's something, you know, I wish I would have done more as a kid, but I certainly love being a part of the process now without having to physically hit the shot, which was what stressed me out a little bit.
When you guys are out there on tour, what does your schedule look like once you guys leave the course? And how do you think those habits contribute to Ben's ability to be, I don't want to say flatliner, but able to control his emotions on the course?
As far as leaving the golf course, like in the evening?
Just maintaining a balance.
Well, Ben, you know, has 3 kids. They're all unbelievable kids, and he's a big family guy. So he spends time with his family. You know, we both believe in our faith a pretty good bit. So we spend a little time there. Spend time with family. If we're rooming together, we might play a couple games of FIFA just to take it back to the college days when we just, you know, have fun and be at peace at mind and, you know, understand that there's a whole lot more important things in life than golf. And then you kind of can go out and just, here's what we're doing today. This is the goal. And we're going to go play as hard as we can play. And, you know, sometimes it's going to go your way and sometimes it's not. And being able to understand that up front, I think, gives you a little more of a peace of mind instead of some anxiety of how it's going to go.
Yeah, I think it's super important to have that balance. You mentioned earlier that when you're working with Ben, he's very good at just being calm through the storm and pretty much no matter what's going on. Do you think you've played with a lot of different players, seen a lot of different players out on tour. Is everybody like that? Or some guys like that and some guys aren't? And if not, and I'm assuming probably not everybody's like that based on some of the stuff you see on TV, what do you think separates Ben in that aspect, and why do you think it's beneficial for him?
Well, you know, everyone has their own ways that get them going, right? You know, I'm certainly not going to say any names, but there are guys that run wide open. There are guys that get angry. There are guys that get frustrated. And obviously they've been able to channel that in a way that's beneficial to them. I think, you know, for Ben, that's his best way is just being calm, walking at a consistent pace. I focus really hard for me as a caddy on showing up with the same attitude every single day. So there is no variable from me, or I certainly try to eliminate that to where when Luke shows up, he's going to get this from Luke every day, whether it's good, bad, great, ugly, whatever it is. I'm going to be the same person that tries to do the same thing every day just so he doesn't worry about that. You know, I think everyone has their own way that fuels the fire, right? You know, some guys like all that energy. They love the fist pump. Look at Tiger. You don't see a ton of guys that just yell and scream and exploding on the green, and that's, you know, what fuels Tiger, and that's great. And Rory, similar, you know, I don't know. That's a tough question, man, because everyone's different. So everyone has their own flow on the golf course, and you just have to have a caddy that matches that energy.
I know there's a lot of good players that are now caddies on tour, but not every good caddy that played at Clemson or won state AMs, Palmetto AMs, things like that. What do you think how do you think that you are better as a caddy because of your playing experience, like specifically?
I would say just of, you know, I've played almost every shot that there could be. Certainly seeing shots, maybe seeing the creativity of Ben might see this shot. I want to land this ball here or here. And if both of those options maybe aren't fantastic, I'm like, well, you know, if it was me, I might bump and run it up this hill, or this might be an 8-iron pitch into the hill. Maybe just seeing different shots. I would say, you know, most caddies out there are at least pretty good at golf, certainly have an incredible golf knowledge. Some of the guys that are out there have been caddying 30 years. So they've seen the golf courses so many times that when they get on the green, they don't have to pull out a yardage book and figure out which way it breaks. They've seen every putt on the green. So they automatically, I've seen a couple caddies that literally don't even walk over and read the putt. They're like, breaks two balls left from right here. I'm like, bro, how'd you know that? You're like, well, I've just seen the putt so many times. So everyone brings something different to the table. Most players, I would say for sure, are just looking for somebody they feel comfortable with. Because right when you're out there, they have one person they can talk to while they're during the round. You're the punching bag, psychologist, cheerleader. You're really there to try to put on every different hat you can. And if you guys are comfortable with each other, that's a whole lot easier than kind of like a forced relationship. You know what I mean?
When it comes to prepping for courses, as you said, a lot of guys have been out there for a long time, seen a lot of the courses. Tell me about what it's been like for you getting prepped on courses. Ben's obviously probably seen most of the courses more than you have. So what's it been like going out and prepping, and how does your course prep work for your process?
That's been a bit of a learning curve, you know, from a caddy. When I was growing up, I would say my course preparation was abysmal at best. And, you know, Ben telling me, it came from Ben telling me a little bit of what he wants when you go out there. That's still a process that I'm learning, getting better at now. I had an opportunity at the Players Championship to walk around with Michael Greller. That was a fun experience because I'm asking him. He clearly, with Jordan, gets some interesting numbers from some interesting places. And it came to fruition on 16. He was standing at a drain in the right rough. And I walked up in the fairway. In case you hit it in the right, this year, the rough of the Players Championship was unbelievable. So if you hit it in the right rough, it's certainly a layup. And figuring out there's a little rough kind of cross bunker area. So you got to cover that. But if you go too far, then you're blocked out by the tree. So Greller was standing on the drain. I walked up in the fairway and he's shooting me at different ways. So like we could hit it, I don't remember the exact number, 166 yards at the third flag on top of the grandstands, 145 yards at the first flag. The cover on that was 117 yards and everything's marked off from that drain. So Ben on the third round hit it, I think it was the third round, hit it in the right rough and he was like 8 yards behind that drain. And he was like, all right, so what's the cover to get over that rough area? I was like, well, you got 142 from this drain at the first flag, 166 at the third flag. We need 145 yards in between them. And it was so nice. And that came from preparation. I call it bowling. I always on Tuesday afternoon, I'll take two or three golf balls out, lay all four flags or disc on the ground and just roll balls in a circle around it and kind of chart this breaks two balls right, four balls right, the straight lines from right here. And then you pick out a spot kind of behind the green, like the straight putt is from this corner to this tree. So, you know, if you're a little bit right of it, it's going to break a little bit right. If you're left of it, it's going to break a little bit left, or whatever the case may be. But, you know, course preparation, that's done without Ben because, you know, if he hooks it left off the tee on 11, what's the layup numbers? I don't want Ben to see me out there getting numbers, but okay, Ben, in case you snap it left off the tee, I'm going to get these numbers. That's all the dirty work that people don't really see because, for example, on 18 at Sawgrass, if you hook one left in the water and you're dropping on the second tee box, the last thing you want is your player to say, what do I have to get back to the fairway? And you say, I don't know. And you're pacing off trying to get it real quick. That's why you do your work on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's the stressful moments that you can hopefully make a little bit easier for your player when he's upset or frustrated. All right, what do I have to get back to the fairway? 242. You know, have an answer quick. That always alleviates some stress from the player, in my opinion.
Absolutely. What kind of questions were you asking Greller and what were his answers?
Really, what are the numbers you're looking for? What numbers are you trying to get? What's your project? It was a lot of more watching maybe than asking questions. I want to see what he's doing out here. I want to see what he's getting notes on. You know, really getting full detail on the green. Where are the slopes? Where's this ridge? Say there's a runoff on the left side of the green. And the pin's 8 paces from the left side of the green, but that slope starts 4 paces off the left side of the green. Technically, you only have 4 paces left of the flag instead of 8. So I'm trying to really make sure I have all of that in. Picking out, you know, up and downs. We use Decade Golf a decent amount as far as picking up numbers, 1, 2s, what flags we aiming away from, where are the easiest and hardest up and downs. I think that's a fairly common. Every caddy tends to do that differently, I believe, from what I've seen. People will put a little green spot on the side of their yardage book, a yellow spot, a red spot. My opinion, I don't do that because I don't want Ben to look at my yardage book and see a big red spot behind a green because then automatically you're thinking about that, right? So I just try to have a little number, at least make my yardage book look consistent with his. I might have a little bit more random things in there, but trying to make it look consistent. As far as Greller, you know, I tried to look in his book, see what kind of notes he had, and then I try to do that to most all caddies and then use a little combo of all that information to come up with, whatever I have in mind.
So you guys use a Decade Golf, and a lot of people out there use a variation. We're big fans of Decade. We've had Scott on before, really enjoy his work, and we use that. We've attributed a lot of Cooper's success as a mid-am. Not that mid-am career has lasted that long. He's been 25 for only a little bit, but last year with the USAM and with the US
as a young mid-am. Guy.
Yeah, with the USAM and the US mid-am qualifier, working a full-time job, playing some solid golf, we really attributed a lot of that to course management, how we worked ourselves around the course, and just staying in position and staying patient through it all. So you guys use Decade. I want to ask about that. As far as like, but what you've seen with other people using variations, et cetera, like tell us, for example, did Greller tell you how they choose their targets when they're, how they choose their targets when they're hitting into greens?
No, we didn't discuss that. I would say that I learned all about Decade from Ben. For amateurs as well, exactly. You nailed it on the head with Cooper. With, you know, for an amateur golfer, I would say the biggest problem is aiming at the flag all the time and not realizing that the biggest way you can lower your score is not making bogeys, because you're going to have birdie opportunities. So when you get on those hard holes, realizing that the target is not at the flag. The amount of times that we aim at the flag on the golf course, I would say, this is a guesstimate, but I would say 4, maybe 5 times around. Our target is never, we're just trying to leave ourselves the best putt that's going to eliminate, you know, a disaster, or certainly attempt to, and just eliminating dumb bogeys. And dumb bogeys kill momentum. They kill everything you have going for you. So when you got a 6-iron in, you're not worried about a 6-iron. If you don't feel comfortable about the shot, hit it in the center of the green. Trust your putter, putt from 30 feet. And I think, you know, amateur golfers could learn a whole lot from that. If you're a scratch golfer, fastest way to get into plus golfer is eliminate bogeys. And Decade Golf is a fantastic way to do that.
So you were talking earlier about how you walked the course and were prepping alongside Greller. Why don't you talk about kind of what a normal prep week looks like for you as a tour caddy? Because I think a lot of people don't really understand just how much work caddies are doing if you're doing the job correctly early in the week.
Yeah, so Monday we spend majority of the day practicing. There's normally always 18-hole pro-ams on Monday. We normally try to play each 9. So we're not out there playing 54 holes on the week. We'll play 9 on Tuesday, and most of the time we're in the Wednesday Pro-Am, so we'll play the opposite 9 on Tuesday. Mondays are normally practice days, chipping, putting, getting used to how the greens are responding to pitch shots, some bunker play. Rough's different every week, so getting comfortable with how the ball is coming out of the rough. We'll always do TrackMan games. Most of the time, we'll have it set up for numbers that are going to be common for the week. Some courses are obviously shorter, some are longer. So some of that practice is with 4, 5, and 6 iron. Some of it's more with wedge, 9, and 8 iron. And then most of the time when we leave on Monday, depending on what time it is or when the pro-am ends, I'll go out. I don't like doing 18 holes in a row because that is a lot of work. Most of the time it takes about 3 hours per 9 holes. If you're, you know, I'm walking down the rough, figuring out the rough's better on the left side on number 2, right rough's nasty. There's not a whole lot of rough short of this bunker. Left trees are better than the right fairway bunker, or, you know, stuff like that. Making sure the yardages are right, getting a yardage from over by the cart path somewhere, or one that we could possibly be, and there's not a head over there or something like that. And then, you know, the bowling takes a lot. That's a lot of, really, I need to start doing squats in the off week, because that's a lot of bending down and getting back up. You know, and it's amazing too, when you're out there rolling balls, it just makes you see the green better. You can see which way it's breaking. It makes you reading putts a little easier. Ben doesn't use me a ton on reading putts. He's a fantastic putter and he does most of that on his own. But if he calls me in there, I certainly don't want to be guessing. And during tournaments for me, I'll always try to go over there and read the putt, whether he asks my opinion or not. I'll pick out a spot that I think the ball needs to roll over, and then I'll just watch that spot the whole time I'm really just calibrating myself, make sure I'm reading the greens right. Tuesdays, we'll normally play nine holes, sometimes in the morning. Sometimes it's a game with a couple other guys. Sometimes we're out there by ourselves, and we'll come up with games ourselves. We have an up-and-down game we do almost every time, to where I'll pick, you know, three shots, one short fairway, medium fairway, and then like a 70-yard shot, one short rough, long rough, medium rough, and then two bunker shots. And that's nine holes, and we'll have a game where, you know, six is a push of getting up and down six out of nine times. So we'll have that game. And then again, it's just walking out. The more you're at the golf course, the more comfortable you are. And if I can eliminate ever saying I'm not sure, or I think, you know, that's my number one goal. Ben says, how far we got here? Better not say I don't know. You better have an answer quick. And that comes from preparation on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It's kind of like studying for an exam, man. It depends on how well you studied. If you haven't put in the time, then you're going to be nervous on the golf course. If you put in the time, when you get under the gun, when the TV cameras are on you, you don't flinch because you're prepared. So I just, whatever way to make sure I'm 100% prepared, then that eliminates stress on my end because I feel comfortable.
That is cool. When it comes to the week, Monday through Wednesday, you're doing the prep work. Thursday through Sunday, you're playing some golf. You finish up a round of golf. All right, we're done. Scorecard signed. Everything's correct. What is your process right after that? And how are you gauging rounds? Like, you personally, you're like, all right, well, what do we think about that round, et cetera? How are you recovering? How's he recovering? Tell us about that.
It fluctuates, you know, how he's feeling when he gets done. But most of the time, it's almost like a warm down, depending on how we played. But most every time we'll go out there and maybe tweak a couple things, hit a couple balls, do a little game, quick warm down. We'll discuss around at least a little bit of, do you think we could have done something different on this that went bad? Or, you know, it's just a minor discussion about the round. Checking stats, strokes gained, seeing where we could have improved, what could have been better. It's not anything stressful, you know, because you're in the tournament at that point. You're just, yeah, I might go hit a couple putts, feel like my toe got up a little bit on the putter, or something didn't feel 100% comfortable, so I'm going to go use putting trainer for a second, just roll a couple more. It's not anything about worrying about what just happened, because that's already done. It's just figuring out what can we do better tomorrow. And it's just the kind of a light warm down, I guess, would be the best way to describe it.
When it comes to warming down and tweaking things, tell us, who does Ben work with as far as the swing coach? Tell us a little bit about the process of integrating a swing coach and any like changes or adjustments during a week, prior to a week, et cetera.
He works with Justin Parsons. We call him JP. It's a guy from Northern Ireland. He's a fantastic coach, and man alive, does he know what he's talking about. I've really enjoyed getting to know him. It's nice when I can go down there with him when they're getting a lesson. I did that earlier on in the year. And, you know, that gives Ben a little bit more confidence in me too, because if something's going wrong and it's not good, I have a whole notebook of everything that JP's ever said. Try to pull out, well, you know, maybe we've gotten a little crooked on our alignment, rib cage is off a little bit, let's go back to just making sure we're aligned square, whatever the case may be. But there's not a whole lot of swing changes during a tournament, because once you're there, that's your swing for the week. And it would be, if anything, it's just making sure we're lined up properly. If shoulders get open or shoulders get closed or whatever, maybe just making sure the alignment's right. Because if Ben's aligned right and he's swinging right, it's just see how low we can go. Let's go play some good golf. So that's obviously the goal. So when you get to a tournament, prep Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and when you get to Thursday, there's no discussions about swing or changing anything. Maybe something very minor, and your left foot might be here, or let's go hit a couple fades just to get a feeling there. But there's certainly no major swing changes week of a tournament.
what does your all schedule look like for this upcoming season? And do you guys plan it on what course will fit Ben, or do you kind of just play in however many tournaments you can?
I think it, I'm trying to pull up the schedule right now to make sure I have it right. But we are taking this week off, obviously, unfortunately. And then we're not in the Heritage at the moment. So we're going to go to the Dominican Republic, where Ben is played pretty well there. I believe we came in 10th last year, and I think he came in second the year before that. So he's played some really nice golf there. Ben's really, really good in the wind, and the Dominican Republic wind blows 20 in some form of east every day. So he's had a lot of success there. And then after that is the Zurich in New Orleans. And we are going to play with Carson Young, another Clemson guy who he's about your age. I'm really looking forward to that. He's become a friend of mine, and he's fun to be around. And team golf, that's, you know, that's a unique tournament. That's just fun. That is a little different than, you know, your run-of-the-mill PGA Tour season. And then I believe it's the one in McKinney, Texas after that, and then Myrtle Beach. So we'll be gone a month straight coming up. And he's playing really good golf now. He's swinging great. I'm looking forward to getting back on the road. He doesn't, I would say, to answer your question about the schedule, sorry, there's a little bit of picking and choosing. Maybe Ben tries not to play five or six in a row unless he has to, because your body gets worn down after a month straight. So we'll normally go four max in a row, and he tries to do his schedule based off that more than courses, because of course you can figure out how to play most golf courses.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about your playing career. I know we've talked a lot about your caddying, but I want to kind of hear some about your career. Tell us how you ended up at Clemson, your junior golf, your pro golf, all that kind of stuff.
Well, this might be a long answer to the question,
hey,
but
take as much. I've essentially asked about your whole life. You might want to take a little bit longer than be a little bit shorter about it.
That's right. I'll fire it off from the beginning. So, for whatever reason, no one in my family really played golf, but it was the first thing I ever did when I stood up. My first word was ball. I walked around the house swinging at a ball with random objects I picked up. My dad was like, well, I guess maybe I'll get him a golf club. So I got one of those blue Little Tykes golf clubs. And by the time I was 2 and a half, they all had holes in them. It was the only thing I did. I got videos at home where my mom would stand in the yard and I'm just ripping plastic golf balls out of one hand. It didn't even have two hands on the golf club. And then when I was 3, for Christmas, I got my first set of real golf clubs. There's a pretty cute home video at home where I'm just walking around going, I got a free iron. I got a free iron. And funny now, because nobody ever uses a 3 iron, is too hard to use in the first place. But I played in my first golf tournament when I was 5, I believe, 5 or 6, at the Thornblade Club in Greenville. And then I won the state championship when I was 9. And then I won when I was 12. And then I kind of got into AJGA golf a little bit. I spent most of my time with South Carolina Junior Golf. They were unbelievable. I mean, when Clemson won a national championship, there was nobody on the team from outside of South Carolina. So we always had a real, real strong group growing up. Ben was in that group. A guy named Philip Molico was in that group. Vince Hatfield. And we all went to Clemson together. That was probably the main reason why I went to Clemson, was Coach Penley. I loved Coach Penley. And a bunch of my friends were going there too. So I was really looking forward to that. I played a decent amount of AJGA. I was fortunate enough to qualify for the Cannon Cup my senior year, and that was fun, super fun, even though we got smoked. But the West, I believe, had Bronson Burgoon and Philip Francis and Kyle Stanley. They were stacked, but the Cannon Cup was super. AJGA teaches you a lot of you know, we got in a lot of trouble if we had our hat on inside the clubhouse. You couldn't have your shirt untucked. There was a lot of things that I don't think I realized at that age that it would be super beneficial from just learning the respect of golf and treating it as a gentleman's game as it is. And then I got to Clemson, and I was completely natural taught. I just gripped it straight up baseball bat. Didn't even have my left thumb on the club. Jay Haas told me when I was 10, you gotta at least get your left thumb on the club. So I played this sweeping hook for all of junior golf. And then before 11th grade, I grew 7 inches in one summer. And my golf game went sideways. I'm still trying to swing on the same swing plane I've had my entire life, but all of a sudden I'm 7 inches taller. So it was super flat. And that took a little bit of time and adjusting. And then once I got to Clemson, Coach Penley came up to me and he said, look, man, this is a kind of a cool story, but he said, look, man, you know, I know you've played golf 10 finger your entire life. You're not going to play a golf tournament for me 10 finger. You can either pick interlock or overlap, pick whichever one's most comfortable to you. And I shot 92 the first time with the Clemson golf team. I shot 92 at Smithfield's Country Club. And I got in the car driving back to Clemson, and I called my parents, and I was in tears. I was like, this, you know, this sucks. I'm transferring. I want to go to Florida State. I want to go somewhere else. He's changing everything I've done with golf. My dad got on the phone and said, son, let me tell you two things. Number one, he is in the Hall of Fame. Number two, he's paying you money to play golf with Clemson. He's not trying to mess you up. And that stuck with me for a long time. And that next summer was the summer that I won the state AM and won the Palmetto AM. So, you know, I went up to coach and I was like, I can't believe I could never hit a fade my entire life. The biggest fade I could hit was a push straight ball. And then all of a sudden I could turn it right. And it took me a long time to get confidence in doing that. But, you know, that changed my perspective because everyone, golf's such an individual sport. You think you've got it figured out. Like, I'm good at golf, man. I got a scholarship to Clemson. It wasn't full scholarship, but I got a scholarship to Clemson. I'm playing at one of the best teams in the nation. And coach was like, hey, dude, you're not going to play golf like that for me. And that's a tough pill to swallow for a minute as an 18-year-old. Like, hang on, man. This is the only way I know how to play golf. And, you know, all of a sudden I could hit shots that I never thought I could. So when that pin was back right, I could actually get it kind of close to the flag. When growing up, the pin was back right, I was hitting it 40 feet at best and just hoping for a par. So then I kind of got burnt out on golf. I think it goes back to a little bit of the stressing myself out. The national championship senior year, we were playing pretty well. And I stumbled to the finish line in the final round. And that was a hard pill to swallow, finishing up the college career. That was at the honors course. I was like, you know what? I'm done. I don't want to play golf anymore. And so I went to work at this company, Fluor. It's used to be Fluor Daniel or Daniel Construction. And I got into HR and international staffing. And it was kind of like what you were talking about, Daniel, with we had charity tournaments every year. And all the guys, when they would pick a team, some of the executives always wanted Luke on their team because he played golf at Clemson. And I didn't play golf anymore. So I would try to practice a little bit, go hit some balls. And I played pretty well with them. And one of the guys called me in his office on a Friday. And I had a meeting for a staffing in Mongolia. And he said, hey, Luke, can you come to my office? And I said, well, I got a meeting for Mongolia in 15 minutes. And he said, send your boss. And I was like, okay. So I walked in her office and I was like, hey, you know, he just called me in his office and I'm not sure what he wants. She was like, what's going on in Mongolia? I was like, I don't know. Here's my notes. So I walked over to his office and he was like, what's up, Luke? You know, how much money does it cost to play professional golf? And I was like, man, I'm not even sure. He was like, you know, could you maybe bring in a breakdown for me tomorrow? I've just always been curious. And I was like, okay. And so I went home, broke it down, what it would cost to be a member, entry fees in eGolf, G Pro Tour, membership at a golf court, everything. Wrote down everything, broke it all down, and took it into his office the next morning. He said, "Thanks, Luke, appreciate it." I was like, okay, that was weird. I didn't think anything of it. This was 2014, and I had finished the national championship in 2010. And so about 2 months later, I got another phone call from him. "Hey, can you come down to my office?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." I walked in and he was like, "Hey, me and three other guys are going to give you 20K. Do you want to go play professional golf?" I was like, "Dude, what?" And he was like, "Yeah, we got it all set up. We started an LLC in your name. You know, we think you'd be great at it. You know, what do you want to do?" And I mean, my stomach kind of sank with nerves, excitement, everything. I was like, "Dude, I haven't played a golf tournament since 2010. It's been 4 years." He was like, "Do you want to or not?" I was like, "Yeah, let's go, man. You know, I've got a different perspective on the game now that I've sat in a cubicle for 4 years. And, you know, golf is a little more interesting than it used to be. I didn't think I would ever have this opportunity." So the first golf tournament that I played in was 2 weeks later. And I didn't even know where to begin. I was like, I don't remember how to practice. I don't remember what, I don't even know where to start. So I went out one day and just chipped and putted for like 2 or 3 hours just to kind of get that dialed in. I was always a pretty good ball striker, but I always struggled chipping and putting. So I tried to kind of fine tune that and then went over and hit some golf balls and I played 3 rounds and went straight to Hilton Head for the first eGolf Tour event. And that first round, if my memory serves me correct, I had 9 birdies and 2 triple bogeys because I hit it 100 yards out of bounds a couple of times. It was just like, oh no. Obviously you're a little rusty, but I was like, well, the offense is there, putting pretty good. And then, you know, we were off to the races and it took a couple months to get back into it. And then, man, you know, it's something that I feel like if I would have gotten to 45 years old and never attempted the professional golf life, then I would have always wondered what if, right? So it was such an awesome experience and I cannot thank those guys enough. And, you know, it prepared me a lot for caddying. I didn't know that it was preparing me for caddying some, but I certainly learned a ton about myself and golf. And one of the guys that I played with all the time on the mini tours was Seamus Power. And I always came home and I was like, that dude is nasty. He's so much better than I am. And I don't know how he's not on the PGA Tour. So it was fun to go out and see him. Now, like, what's up, Seamus? Remember me? He used to beat me to a pulp all the time, bro. About time you made it out here. So it's certainly been cool. And I'm not sure, you know, for me, as I was talking earlier about how wide open my brain runs, I don't know how the PGA Tour would have gone, man. It's stressful on your brain. If you can't keep a level mind, it'll wear you out in a heartbeat. I used to get done with a golf round and just pass out for 2 hours almost every time. It was just my brain was fried.
I even did it when I was caddying for Ashton. I would do the same thing. I would go to the room and just pass out after the round and be like, my brain is fried. And he'd be like, dude, I don't even know why you're saying that. You didn't even have to hit any shots.
Yeah.
But just going through the same stuff, you know, will wear you out.
It's 5 hours of just nonstop thinking of just, you know, one thing I was thinking about, especially with this podcast and like growing up. Right. Because before a round, I don't know whether it's anxiety or excitement, it's probably a combination of everything, but I would have a tendency to overthink. I still do it to this day a little bit. How often do you ever overthink of what am I going to do if I birdie the first 6 holes? What am I going to do if I shoot 29 on the front nine? You're always overthinking on the, what if I snap hook it in the trees on 2? What if I hit it out of bounds on 3? What if I'm 3-putting every hole? What if I can't make a 5-footer? And I think that can be a disastrous spiral, right? Because you're only thinking of all the bad things that can happen. So I try to focus on like, what am I going to do when all these TV cameras show up because Ben shot 27 on the front? You know, try to get your mind thinking in a different positive way instead of what if this happens? What if this happens? What if, how am I going to come back if I make triple? What if I make two triples? Or you can't do that. And that's unfortunately where my brain would go for sure. I'd be before round, like, you know, and then it's like a mental battle. I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? You're just going to play another round of golf. It's just hard to fight that fight inside your own head. For some people, I think it's easier for some than others. But yes, my brain was toast when I get done with the round.
Yeah, I definitely want to ask one more question about your playing career. And that is, did you ever go to Q school? And what was that experience like?
I did Q school 5 times. Each one of them were a disappointing ending in their own right. The first year I ever went to Q school, I had to go to pre-qualifying. I didn't really know what I was doing. I signed up a little bit too late, had to go to California. And then that was a weird tournament. I don't remember my exact scores, but I know for a fact that round 2 and 3, I was 4 under at one point and shot over par. And then in the final round, I was 5 or 6 over par early, and I was outside the cut line, and I fought back to make it just through pre-qualifying. And then that was like, okay, well, I survived, made it through. And then I went to first stage and shot 12 or 13 under par and came in like 4th. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a little bit easier than I thought. And then got to second stage, got slapped, and that was humbling very quick. And second year I went to Q school, I didn't have to go to pre-qualifying, and I went to Utah. And I can't remember what round it was, but I shot a 29 on the back nine and shot 62, which was my lowest round ever. It was the second round. And then the third round, I played pretty good, and I was in great position to make it through. And the last day, I shot 72 and missed by 1, getting out of first stage. And that was, felt like, I mean, somebody just drop kicked me in the stomach, because I was playing so well. I still shot 14 or 15 under par and didn't even make it out. So I was like, I just played really good golf and didn't make it through first stage. So I got to regroup and figure out something different. And then Q school, my last year, which would have been 2018, I think that was the biggest blow and maybe the final straw for me. I shot 72 the first day, had 1 birdie and 1 bogey, and the course was playing pretty easy. And I got done and I was in like 70th and top 19, and ties go through, I believe, for me that week. And the second round, I had a caddy who was one of my best friends that played soccer at Clemson. And I double bogeyed the first hole of the second round. So I'm 2 over par for the tournament, in not good shape. I looked at him. I was like, dude, this is going to be my last professional event. We just need to have fun. And he was like, I agree, man. Let's go. Let's, you know, whatever. And the rest of that round, I had 5 birdies and no bogeys. So I shot -3. And I moved up to maybe 60th place or something. And in the third round, it was a little bit windy and kind of misty, not super windy. It was okay. And for whatever reason, my putter went blackout for that day. I think I was 9 under through 14 maybe, and then got a little nervous because I couldn't control where my brain was, and made a bogey on 18. And I shot 64 and I moved up to like 12. So all of a sudden I've gone from like, this tournament's over, to, oh my goodness, I'm back in it. And so I'm trying to do math. I'm looking at the board. I'm looking at the weather tomorrow. And I was like, I think par tomorrow for me is going to be 4 under par. I need to shoot 4 under par and I should be good. 5 under par or better, we'll do it. That's hard to do finishing after a 64, you know. So I got out and I turned it like 1 under par. And I was like, okay, a couple more. And I birdied like 10, 12, 13, 14. And I was like, oh my gosh, here we go. I'm going to do it. And then double bogeyed 15. And I was like, okay, now I got to make a birdie. And then I birdied 16. And I was like, okay, I'm 4 under. 17 was like a 240 yard par three, and 18 was 490. And so I'm like, I need a birdie on one of these two holes, but I cannot make a bogey. And I had like 15 feet for birdie on 17, and I hit driver hybrid on 18 to like 20 feet, and I barely missed it. Got down, I'm like 4 under par. I don't know what the leaderboard looks like. That should be good. We'll see. Got done. I was 15 under par for the tournament, which I was very proud of after being 2 over through 19. Turned in at 15 under par, walked in. I was like, hey, guys, what's the cut? They were like 12 under par. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to make it. Sweet. All right, cool. Packed up my stuff, got in the car. We started driving home. I'm looking at the leaderboard. I'm like, man, if everybody behind me beats me, I'm going to tie for 20th place. And it came all the way down to the last group, and one dude shot 72, and I needed him to shoot 73, and I tied for 20th. And I was like, yeah, this feels like national championship, dude. I don't want to play this sport anymore. I'm done. And, sometimes I think, would it have been better if I shot 76 every day just to not even be close? But I don't think that's the case. I think it's knowing, like, you went out in the hardest golf tournaments you can play in, or what they say. You know, I tried to look at Q School, just any other golf tournament, man. Just go out and do you. Prepare the same way. Prepare the best to your ability and play the best golf you can, and then see how you stack up against others. I tried not to think of it as this is what you hear about in golf. This is what you read about. Just another golf tournament. I at least tried to take that mindset. But it is kind of stressful, man. Once you're in the middle of it, try not to look at the leaderboard, but you have to, because you need to know a little bit of what you need to shoot. It was certainly a cool experience, one that I'm glad I had. In the end of it now, you know, I'm happy that I played. I'm happy that I played well. I'm happy that I competed well. It just wasn't quite enough. That wasn't the story that my life was supposed to take.
Was it tough or weird taking money from other people to play golf? Like, because sometimes I can add pressure to what's already tough to make a living, but now you got money that other people are giving you, so you kind of feel like you have a heavier weight on your shoulders, maybe.
You nailed that on the head. That was a tough balance. One of the guys that was helping me out, I'm not sure about dropping all kinds of names on here, but he's been a mentor of mine my entire life, professionally, in work, and just life in general. He's one of the most positive guys with the best look on life ever. I still talk to him regularly now. And, you know, I mentioned it to him because I felt really comfortable. And he was like, dude, we're doing this because we're having a great time watching you compete. We're having a great time watching your scores, man. Please don't think about that. And that gave me a pretty good peace of mind with that. I know that situation is different for other players, because when you're out there playing for whether or not you're going to have power in your house next week, that's impossible to play golf like that. And I know a lot of guys do it, and that I have so much respect for them, because that tells me one thing. Their mental game on the golf course is unbelievable. And mine, I wouldn't have been able to stomach that.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that I take away from that. One thing I've taken away from talking about some stuff with Cooper, if I was giving advice to someone, and not to sound gauche or rude, but like, that sounds like it was a real, what I would call like an actually rich person, like someone who had the money. There's lots of people out there who, oh man, this might be controversial. There are lots of people out there who think they're ballers and like, hey, I'll give you money to go play. And then they're not really giving you money per se. They're not like actually wanting you to go out. They're really counting on that as a return. They're deluded into thinking that they're going to get a great return from it. And really, like golfers, if you're investing in golfers, it's like investing in horses. You got to pretty much assume all of them are going to die. You're going to have to they're going to get put down, and they're not going to win a lot of races, because that's just the nature of the game. That's the difficulty of the game. As if you're going to take money from someone, you got to make sure you're taking it from someone who's actually, I mean, there's going to be business arrangements, all that, but you got to make sure you're taking it from someone who's really like comfortable giving up, who has that money to give up and lose, as opposed to someone who thinks they're actually going to get a return on that money, because otherwise they will put that pressure on you.
100%. I'm very happy that they didn't put me down after, that's for sure.
Once you decided you were going to stop playing golf, did you consider going back into the business world? And what led you to caddying on the PGA Tour?
I was almost lost professionally, kind of, because working in an office is tough. My brain wants to be outside, wants to be doing something all the time. Sitting in a chair for 8 hours a day was tough for me. I'd just lose train of what I was doing. You know, I certainly would, and I was looking back into that strongly. Then I had decided I wanted to go in sales. In the meantime, I started fitting people for golf clubs. That ended up being a great decision because I learned so much about golf equipment that I didn't know. Because when I was playing golf, I walked up to the Titleist guys. They said, I think this shaft would work for you. They put it in my club. Then I got a club. That was it. I didn't know anything about what the shaft was doing, where the kick point was, whether it was tipped. Well, I had no idea. So getting into that and building golf clubs was super beneficial just from a knowledge of the game itself. I got guys coming in or slicing it 40 yards. And, you know, all they want to do is hit it far. They could not care less. Where I'm like, well, hang on, dude. This, I can get this driver to go 10 yards shorter, but you're going to be in the short grass every time. Like, well, I want to go just learning how to fix maybe a super slice. I'm starting to see every kind of swing on the planet. So I'm figuring out what's going on in their swing. You're just seeing different things. And I did that for, probably close to 2 years. And then I got my mindset on, you know what? Golf is what I've done since I was 3 years old. It's still my favorite sport. I still love every aspect of the game and what comes with it in life in general. I want to be in golf. So I started looking around at different manufacturers trying to find different sales jobs. I started interviewing with Callaway, and I got pretty far along down the cycle there, getting close to the final interview. And then that's when Ben called. I was like, what do you think about caddy? And I'm like, dude, pretty much a perfect time to go do it. So I called the Callaway guys back, and they were like, oh, are you kidding me? You need to go do that for sure. You'll learn so much. Go talk to the Callaway guys out there. Go talk to all the manufacturers out there. Get your name out that way. If you want this job when you come back, we can figure that out. And so that, you know, everything just kind of fell into place nicely to end up caddying. Whether I'll be caddying for 20 years or not, I don't know. But it's certainly been something that I enjoy, and it's certainly something that gets my blood pumping. I told Ben, you know, not too long ago, so, you know, Ben, I never thought in my entire life that my alarm would go off at 3:35 in the morning to go to work, and I'm pumped. And, you know, that's something that's super cool and that I don't take for granted. I have a job that thousands of people in this world would die to have. And I try to think about that on the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday when I'm walking an extra 3-4 miles after we've already played, because, you know, there's a ton of people in this world that want that job, and I better be the best I can possibly be at it. And it's super fun. I never thought I'd enjoy caddying as much as I do.
That is awesome, man. I think this is perfect for our final question. We ask the same thing of every guest. And I think this one will be cool to kind of look back on for yourself, because you've had a lot of ups and downs. If you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be?
Be mentally strong and patient. Learn the mental side of golf early on, and I think you'll have a head start on a ton of people. If I could have been 13, 14, 15 years old, and just been focused on one shot at a time instead of worrying about, did I beat this guy? Did I beat this guy? Who am I playing against that week? Doesn't matter. Go out and practice and prepare to the best of your ability, and you'll be able to do it. You know, compare yourself after the tournament, not during it, not before it. I had an instance with, this is going back a little bit, but something that I regret, and here's a little bit of where my mindset was. It was the USAM qualifier. I can't remember what I shot, a couple under par, got done, found out I was in a playoff. And I was like, okay, who am I in a playoff with? They said Harris English and Brian Harman. And I was like, oh, God, I got no chance. And I called my parents. So I was like, I got into a playoff, but I'm with Brian Harman and Harris English. My dad was like, why are you saying it like that? You just played 36 holes with them and you're tied. You're just playing another hole. Dude. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. But being able, that's called being mentally weak is exactly what that is. And, you know, that would be probably my biggest regret. And really practicing properly, just, you know, when Ben goes out to the golf course, if we're on the golf course, there is a purpose for being there. We're either going to work on these fades. We're going to work on our wedge numbers. We're going to work on a couple of drivers. We're going to make sure our alignment's right. When we go to the putting green, we're doing drills on the putting green. You're not just out there hitting golf balls. Because if you go out there and hit two bags of balls, and there's no reason for hitting, but you're not going to gain anything from it. So really having almost like a structured practice of I'm going to do this, this, and this today. And if you go do things with a goal and have a plan set up, you'll get more out of an hour's practice than most people do in 5 hours. And really learning how to practice properly is imperative. If you start that at 10, 12 years old, goodness, you're going to be laughing people by the time you get to college.
That's the truth. Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you, your journey on the PGA Tour or anything like that?
Luke H. Clemson, LukeHClemson. It's really hard for me to spell that without doing the chant that goes with it, but that's the best I got.
Well, good. We'll keep our arms down. We won't be swinging around or anything like that. I've been.
It's hard not to pause on the O N. Yeah.
Perfect. Well, we didn't talk about this at the beginning. We should have. But by the time this releases, we'll also have out some premium episodes. This is our free podcast. This is our normal interviews with guests. We put this on our free, and then we do throughout the year. We have one-on-one conversations with me and Cooper, conversations with some of our buddies who are out on various tours, talking about what's going on with them, just like short little blips. So be sure to check that out on our website. You can find that at ttc.supercast.com. That's where you're going to find all of our paid tournament code episodes. This helps us keep the podcast going, helps us pay the bills, helps us keep the lights on. As you can see from Cooper's camera right now, if you're watching the camera, Cooper can't keep his lights on right now. We can't afford it because we don't have enough subscribers there. So check it out. We promise we're going to deliver great value content. Thank you to PubView Books. You can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on Twitter at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to join us and diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.